DiscerningHearts.com presents St. Thérèse and Marie, a story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher. Father Gallagher is a member of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary, a religious community dedicated to retreats and spiritual formation according to the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius of Loyola. Father Gallagher is featured on several series on the EWTN television network, including Living the Discerning Life, the spiritual teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola. He's the author of numerous books on the teachings of St. Ignatius of Loyola, as well as on the teachings of Venerable Bruno Lanteri, founder of the Oblates of the Virgin Mary. St. Thérèse and Marie, a story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Welcome, Father Gallagher.
Thank you, Chris. Glad to be back again.
I'm so glad that we have the opportunity to once again revisit the Martin family, but also the extended family, the Gruens. And you really helped us in our previous conversations to really get a sense of the childhood of St. Thérèse and Marie and their relationship. But there is so much more to who they were to each other and the fruitfulness that would end up bearing out for so many afterwards.
Mm. Well, let's just pick right up with that. We're still in, you know, kind of the young girlhood stage of this relationship, but that's going to change pretty quickly because with Thérèse, by the time she gets to be 15, things are dramatically different. She's 13 at this point. This is another one of these summer letters when Marie with the Guérin family is on the seashore. And Thérèse writes from Lisieux, and I'm just going to quote one paragraph from this. "We went yesterday to spend the afternoon at Madame Maudelon's house." So this is Thérèse's aunt and Marie's mother, Céline Guérin, her sister, who married a Monsieur Maudelon. And we've mentioned before the three daughters especially, who are of the same age with Marie and Thérèse and spend a lot of time together as children. "So we went to the Maudelon home, and I had a lot of fun with Céline and Helene. Madame Papineau, who is her tutor, gave me a holiday for tomorrow in honor of the feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel." So she's writing on July 15th, and the next day is the feast of Our Lady of Mount Carmel. "So she gave me a holiday so that I can go to listen to the sermon," which means she'll go to the chapel of the Carmel and there listen to the sermon. All right, the following letter is from a year later, again in the summer. This is in June. So Marie is now 17, Thérèse is 14. And Thérèse has just spent time with them at the seashore, and the day after she returns, she writes a letter to Marie, who is having problems with her teeth at this point. "How are you this morning? Did you sleep well last night? Is your tooth causing you less suffering?" In fact, there's a letter from Jean to Thérèse's sister Céline telling her that Marie is actually in quite a lot of pain. It was a wonderful thing that Thérèse was there because Thérèse was able to help her a lot in that time. Okay, so is your tooth causing you less suffering, so forth. "Dear little Marie, look at all the questions I'm asking you this morning, but alas, nobody can answer me, and I am forced to answer them myself. So I'll do it to my own advantage, and I can see that you are much better." That's a charming thing. I don't know what's going on, so I'm going to answer it, and I choose to see that you're better. "I have returned from the Carmel, so Marie and Pauline are already in the Carmel, and she goes on one of these visits. I have returned from the Carmel. I told Marie and Pauline how much you are suffering, and they're going to pray to God that he cure you and that you can enjoy your time at Trouville," which is the small town on the sea. And then here's a nice little thing. "I leave you kissing you not on your two cheeks, for I fear hurting your teeth, but on your pretty little forehead." And she ends the letter in that way. The next letter now, we really are moving into out of the sort of young girlhood stage. We're now on the threshold of Thérèse's vocation to the Carmel. Now, she's been thinking about this, and it's been clear in her heart since she was 9 that this was her vocation. But she's now 14 years old, and she is moving heaven and earth to be able to enter the Carmel at age 15. So this letter is 5 months later, and Thérèse and her sister Céline and their father are on the pilgrimage to Rome, which is in this year 1888, which is 50 years from the priestly ordination of the Pope, who is Leo XIII at the time. The pilgrimage is on the occasion of the Pope's jubilee. But for Thérèse, what is very much at the heart of her whole desire to go is the hope to win the Holy Father over to her desire to enter at a young age. And I think elsewhere we've gone through the backstory of this. She is determined that she's going to enter after Christmas of this year. So she'll just have turned 15 at that time. And she has, you have that dramatic moment on the Pentecost Sunday afternoon. The statue is still there at the family home in the garden behind the house. You can see it, where she approaches her father, Louis, and asks his permission to enter the Carmel, which is a great, great sacrifice for him. He loves all of his daughters, but Thérèse, the youngest, there's something very special there. She is, as he calls her, his queen. He gives his permission, and that's when he goes over to the garden wall, plucks a small white flower, hands it to her as an image of God choosing her for the Carmel. And Thérèse keeps that flower for the rest of her life, and that's where you get the little flower. Then she needs the permission of her uncle, who at the death of their mother was appointed deputy guardian of the five girls. And so she needs his permission also in order to enter the Carmel. And he has his doubts about this. She goes through two very painful weeks, and then pretty much like everyone, he gives in, and he gives his permission. And then because she needs a dispensation from the age requirement, she's too young to enter, she and her father go to visit the bishop and make this request. And he's very touched by this, but he refers her to, very appropriately, to the priest who has the canonical oversight of the Carmel. And that is the priest who is pastor of the parish in which the Carmel is situated. That's the structure of authority at the time. And he is dead set against this for a number of reasons. And there's some value to them. She's young. Her father still needs her. No harm will be done if she waits a few years before she goes. In any case, he simply refuses permission. And then the pilgrimage to Rome comes up for the Pope's jubilee. Louis was a great traveler. He would have loved this, and he'll take the two girls, Céline and Thérèse, with him on this trip. And for Thérèse, at the heart of it is the idea that comes to her, what if I ask the Holy Father for his permission when we're in pilgrimage and we have an audience with the Holy Father in Rome, which is a pretty bold thing. You know, there are thousands of people at these audiences and so forth. So Thérèse conceives the thought of asking the Holy Father's permission. And in this, she's encouraged by the Carmel, the former superior and one of the foundresses of the Carmel, Mother Genevieve, who is held in reputation of high sanctity in the Carmel, and the present prioress, Mother Marie de Gonzague. They encourage this. Pauline is very much in favor of this. And she writes this to Thérèse, that there are letters going back and forth between Carmel and the pilgrims as they journey through Italy and then down to Rome and eventually back up to Lisieux. So there's an extensive correspondence that we have in the publication of the letters of Thérèse to and from Thérèse. So Thérèse is on that pilgrimage. They're getting closer to the time when she will meet the Holy Father. And Marie writes a letter to her as all of this is happening. So this is in November 10th or 11th, and the audience with the Holy Father will be November 20th. Dear little sister, it's a week ago today that we left each other when they left on the pilgrimage. And what a long journey you've made since that time, and what marvels have passed before your eyes. So just to get the ages, Thérèse is 14 and Marie is 17 at this point. We follow you everywhere. They know the itinerary and the letters are going back and forth. And we think that you must be very tired. As for myself, time seems very long. And on Sunday, I didn't sing at Mass. Now, I just mention for the first time, I think, that Marie had an exquisitely lovely soprano voice. As she played the piano very well, And she had just a lovely singing voice, which was actually the delight of her Uncle Louis. He loved to hear her play and sing. And in the Carmel, we'll see Thérèse mentioned the joy that she brings to the Carmel just with the beauty of her singing. But they went to Mass on Sunday, and she didn't sing, and she explains why. I didn't sing at Mass, not having my singing teacher behind me. Her singing teacher here is her Uncle Louis, who also had a lovely voice. And I'll just read a sentence from something that Céline wrote in memory amongst some remembrances of her father. And she says this of Louis: "He had a very beautiful voice. It was remarkable, full and sonorous, exact and pleasing." So Marie calls him her singing teacher. He wasn't there. Of course, he's on the pilgrimage. She didn't sing. "Yesterday I went to your house," so she walks over to Les Buissonnets, "and I used the swing." That swing has a little bit of a history for Thérèse, because her older sister Marie was worried about Thérèse's posture as a young girl. And so she got this swing as a remedy for that. And Thérèse fell in love with it. She loved to swing. If you look in the early part of the story of the soul, you'll see her talking about this. So Marie goes over to the swing. "I went to your house and I used the swing, but this swing, which usually pleases me so much, bored me, and I left it very quickly." She's missing Thérèse. "As for the pears, you may tell Céline that there were some much too ripe, and Mama gave some to the poor of the district." So there are trees with pears. It's in the fall, and they're there. I'll just read the rest of this, not because it's particularly significant, but it just gives us an insight into Marie at this age. "There was a little pear tree, and its fruit was yellow, and nobody knew the name. I called them Normandy pears." They're in Normandy. "And everybody laughed at me and said that pears of this kind don't exist. There aren't any Normandy pears. Finally, I insisted that they were cooking pears, having heard Céline say it. I was not mistaken. They were English pears. And Marie," so this is the Thérèse's older sister Marie in a visit to the Carmel. So this obviously came up in the conversation in that particular visit to the Carmel, the pears, and what kind of pears were they. "And Marie gave us the explanation of this famous pear tree. I knew they were pears that had a kingdom as their name, but I had forgotten only to cross the English Channel," with an exclamation point. So if I had just gotten over to England, then we'd been fine. She realizes that this is, I don't know, this kind of small talk that she's making. "I notice that I have filled my pages and that I am always saying trite things. I am always the same, no more serious than I was formerly, always falling into the same faults." And I think it's good just to note that, because this is an introduction of a theme that's going to return. Marie is so conscious of her failings. Marie was very fun-loving, and she was exuberant, and just energy poured out of her when she did these things. And it could be a little too much at times. And Thérèse, actually, in the convent, will mention this to her.
Could we mention real quick, too, Father, that if you have the opportunity, and I'm sure we'll be doing this in the video that will accompany our conversations, that when you see images of Marie taken by Céline, who was quite the photographer of the family, you see a very exuberant, smiling, energetic. You can just feel her energy from the pictures. And this is at a time when pictures, you had a pose, you had a weight, and yet there was something about Marie that when you saw pictures of her, it just kind of leapt right off the photograph.
Yeah, I would think anybody who's sharing this conversation with us will find it very helpful to look at photos of Marie, and there are plenty of them. A little bit of a search on the web will bring them up. And there's a reason why there are many of them. And the reason for that is that the sisters who so often benefited from the help of her father Isidore financially and in other ways, they would have these photos taken in gratitude, and then they'd be sent back to the family, and they kept them, which is why we have a lot of the photos that we have. And yes, Céline was the one who brought the photographic equipment into the Carmel, but I'll add that Marie was pretty good at it too. Marie was intelligent, she was very capable. And she was also, you'll see in some of her letters, we're probably not going to get into them, but she gets into details about developing photos when she's asking other people to develop them that are certainly beyond my knowledge, you know, of the technicalities of how that's done and how they did it in her day. So as we get to know Marie, we'll see that she has a very rich and exuberant sense of humor, which she could use in very beautiful ways, but she could also take it to excess at times. And we'll see Thérèse comment on that when Marie is in the Carmel later. So she continues, "We just returned from the Carmel, where we spent a nice visit, and Pauline told me to tell you that she really wanted you to speak to the Sovereign Pontiff on the matter of your entrance to Carmel." So Pauline gives this commission to Marie to mention this to Thérèse in her letter, but Pauline doesn't stop there. She also sends a letter directly to Thérèse about this. And then Pauline's advice continues, "If he, the Pope, does not pass near you, she would like that you go up to him." Now, in my years in Rome, I was present at many papal audiences. That's a pretty bold thing to do. If the Pope approaches people, then people crowd to get as close as they can. But what Pauline is saying is that even if the Pope doesn't do that, you take the initiative to approach the Pope. "She would like that you go up to him to ask the favor you desire with so much fervor." And now Marie speaks of her own participation in this. "On my part, I assure you, dear little Thérèse, that I won't forget you. I am praying for you enough to break the prédu," which is kind of, that's a little touch of Marie there. It's said in a charming way. "I'm praying so hard that the kneeler is going to break. This evening, I was at my half hour of daily adoration," which is another interesting thing. So here is Marie at age 17, spending a half an hour a day in adoration before the Blessed Sacrament. In fact, the Eucharist is very central to everything for her. And when she's given a name as a sister, that will be her name, Sister Marie of the Holy Eucharist. "So this evening I was at my half hour of daily adoration, and I recited a whole rosary for my dear little sister. From what follows, that sounds like the 15 decades. I don't know if the Blessed Virgin is going to answer me. Let it suffice that I wanted to pray with fervor. I had a lot of thoughts that came to disturb my meditation on the sorrowful mystery." So she's distracted as she's saying these. "Each time I was aware of this, I roused myself again to fervor." Then she gets down to where she has one final Hail Mary to say. "Finally, I had only one Hail Mary to say for my little Thérèse, and this one had to be good or bad. I prayed so much to the Blessed Virgin to listen to this prayer, made with so much confidence, that I believe these few words were worth all possible prayers." So she really prays that with all the intensity of her heart. And Maria, as we'll see, has a very intense heart. She's ardent in her emotions. They're strong. And here she puts all of that heart into praying for Thérèse. "If you only knew how I love you, dear little Thérèse. I love you so much that I can't express it. We were speaking yesterday to Pauline about this, and we were saying that we love you not like cousins, but like sisters," and she underlines sisters, "and real sisters," and she underlines real sisters. "Adieu, dear little Thérèse. There are many leagues, so many miles, to travel to kiss you, but for my heart, distances are not an obstacle, and fatigue knows no distances to tell you that I love you. I love you a million times over." And then she signs this, "Your sister who loves you, Marie." 8 days later, Thérèse replies to Marie, and they're in Rome now, and this is November 19th, so it is the day before the audience with Pope Leo the 13th. "Dear little Marie, tomorrow, Sunday, I will speak with the Pope." So Thérèse has decided she's going to do this. "When you receive my letter, the audience will be over." The editors of the letters of Thérèse tell us that the letters would take usually 2 or 3 days to get from France down to Rome and back. "When you receive my letter, the audience will be over. I find that the post office doesn't send letters fast enough." Took them, as I say, 2 or 3 days. "For when you will have my letter, you will know nothing about what has happened. I'm not going to write to the Carmel this evening, but tomorrow I'll tell them what the Pope said to me." Now you can imagine what's in Thérèse's heart this evening, before this day, which for her means everything. Oh, my dear little sister, if you only knew how fast my heart is beating when I think about tomorrow. If you only knew all the thoughts I have this evening, I'd like to be able to tell you them, but no, this is impossible for me. I see Celine's pen running over her paper, so her sister Celine is also in the hotel room with her as they're writing, and she sees Celine's pen is flying over the paper, probably writing to Jean or to her aunt and uncle. I see Celine's pen running over her paper. Mine stops. It has too much to say. Oh, little Marie, I don't know what you're going to think of your poor Therese, but tonight she really can't tell you about her trip. She is going to leave this care to Celine. So she knows Marie would love to know the details of what they've seen, where they've been, but in the imminence of the papal audience, she's just unable to write about those things. And now, we're just beginning to get these traits emerging in Therese. It's the other-centeredness. You know, here she is at such a decisive moment with so much emotion wrapped up in it concerning her own life and vocation. Now she'll turn to Marie. I hope you are well, that you are always playing some beautiful music. In Italy, we hear much music. You realize that it is the country of artists. And she writes this because that very day they had been to St. Peter's and they had gone through the Vatican Museum. And anybody who does those two things knows that you've absorbed probably more art than anyone can absorb in a single day. You realize that it is the country of artists. You would be able to judge much better than I what is beautiful, for I'm not an artist. And that's a little humble on Therese's part. We do have paintings that she's done. Certainly she writes poetry, although Celine is the real best artist of them all. Jean would see some very beautiful paintings. Jean was also painted. You see, little sister, that there is nothing for me at Rome. It's all for the artists. That's not where my heart is. If I could only have one word from the Pope, I'd ask for nothing more. That's really where her heart is centered. Today is dear aunt's feast. It takes a little backing up to get that one, because her aunt Celine was called Celine, but her full name was actually longer. It was Elisa Emilie Celine, so she has three names. And the first, Elisa, is French for Elizabeth, and November 19th is the feast of Elizabeth of Hungary. So Therese remembers that. She's already actually sent a letter ahead to her aunt for her feast day. Today is dear aunt's feast. I'm thinking a lot about her, and I hope she has received our letters, which she did. And then she concludes, dear little sister, hug all those whom I love very tightly for me. I think often of dear little Jeanne. Thanks for your letter, the one that we just read. You don't know the pleasure it gave me. It was like a ray of joy. Au revoir, little sister, and pray for me, your little Therese.
We'll return to St. Therese and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher in just a moment. Did you know that Discerning Hearts has a free app where you can find all your favorite Discerning Hearts programming? Father Timothy Gallagher, Dr. Anthony Lillis, Monsignor John Essef, Deacon James Keating, Father Donald Haggerty, Mike Aquilina, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, and so many more. They're all available on the free Discerning Hearts app. Over 3,000 spiritual formation programs and prayers, all available to you with no hidden fees or subscriptions. Did you also know that you can listen to Discerning Hearts programming wherever you download your favorite podcasts, like Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, even on Audible, as well as numerous other worldwide podcast streaming platforms? And did you know that Discerning Hearts also has a YouTube channel? Be sure to check out all these different places where you can find Discerning Hearts Catholic podcasts dedicated to those on the spiritual journey.
Discerning Hearts provides content dedicated to those on the spiritual journey. To continue production of these videos, prayers, and more, go to discerninghearts.com and click the donate link found there or inside the free Discerning Hearts app to make your donation. Thanks, and God bless.
We now return to St. Therese and Marie, the story of two cousins, with Father Timothy Gallagher.
Marie writes to Thérèse again on November 20th, the following day. So Thérèse has already had the audience with the Pope, but Marie doesn't really know what's happened yet. "My dear little Thérèse, I'm going to ask you to excuse the handwriting. Monsieur Puchot," and the editors tell us that this Monsieur Puchot was the head of the Catholic club in Lisieux, and both families, the Martins and the Guérins, attended regularly the meetings and the social functions of that club. So Marie is explaining why her handwriting isn't as neat as usual. Monsieur Puchot is in the large room with Papa. So at this point, the family is living above the pharmacy, which is on the corner of the main square of Lisieux. And this Monsieur Puchot is occupying the place where otherwise they'd been writing. So the only place they can write is down in the pharmacy. And we are obliged to write on the counter of the pharmacy with a very poor pen. This evening there is a meeting at the Catholic Club, and we are going to it with the Maudelone girls. It is a music evening party and would not amuse you very much. Music, would there be square dancing and the kinds of things that the girls enjoyed so much? And Marie knows that Thérèse's heart is not really in these things. Yesterday we celebrated Mama's feast. We gave her our chair back. So throughout the year, Marie has been sewing a covering for an armchair in the home, and she gives this as a gift to her mother. You can't imagine how pretty it is and how rich the pale blue lining makes it. Afterward, I played a piece on the piano and sang a sentimental song. Well, for her mother's birthday. Feast day. The feast was not complete like last year's, for you were missing from our little reunion. Well, dear little sister, the audience must be over. How eager I am to know the result. Oh, I beg you, write us at the earliest moment. Your letters are awaited with great impatience, and when they are late like the last one, this begins to cause worry. I beg you, too, to tell us in your next letter what are the hotels you must stay in the cities you will be visiting. Knowing which hotels they'll be staying in, they can send them letters. Were you always in good health during your trip? Are you always seeing beautiful things? I am burning with the desire to see you once again, so that you can tell us all the marvels that passed before your eyes. I see the same thing all the time. So it's winter in Normandy. I see the same thing all the time. A muddy street, a fog that doesn't permit you to see 10 feet in front of you, a coating of ice that just misses making you tumble. This is not as cheerful as the fields of Rome covered with daisies, and Italy's beautiful blue sky doesn't appear in Lisieux. Adieu, my dear little Thérèse. Kiss Uncle and Celine for me, your sister, Marie. Right, this next letter is from Thérèse to Marie, written November 25th, so it's 5 days after the audience and after Marie's letter. And Louise, Celine, and Thérèse, the day before, finally left Rome, and she writes this from Florence. And she says, "My dear little Marie, time is passing quickly. A few more days and we will be reunited." Yeah, they're now on the northern part of the trip, heading back toward home ultimately. "I hope that a week from today we shall be with you. I assure you I will leave all Italy's marvels behind with pleasure. All this is very beautiful, but I can't forget those whom I have left at Lisieux. There is a kind of magnet which is attracting me to Lisieux. So I shall return there with," and she underlines, "very much pleasure." I can't help but make the connection, as I see Thérèse write this, with Thérèse and her mother. Zélie never needed anything other than Alençon and the family. Louis was the traveler, but everything that Zélie wanted in her life was right there. And she only travels for pilgrimages occasionally here or there, or to make the trip up to Lisieux with the children to visit their aunt and uncle. But for Thérèse, yes, we've seen all these beautiful things and it's wonderful, but my heart is in Lisieux, family there, and that's where I want to be. "You don't know the joy your nice letter gave me." So that's the letter that we just read. "I was very happy that you spoke to me about dear aunt's feast. I was near you in spirit at that moment, there was no longer any distance between Rome and Lisieux. Now, what about the Pope's, audience with the Pope? And she says this. So this is 5 days after that audience, and she has written to the Carmel about it, and she knows that Marie by now will have heard through the Carmel the news of what's happened there. So she's not going to detail it. But I think because it's so central to this whole exchange at this point between Marie and Thérèse, I think we should look at what Thérèse actually says about that visit. But she does say this, "I will not speak to you about my visit with the Sovereign Pontiff. I think that you have the news about it from Carmel," and in 5 days certainly she does. And then she says, "I was very miserable. But since it is God's will," and then the sentence just trails off there. So before continuing that letter, I'm going to read from The Story of a Soul the rather ample description that Thérèse gives of what took place in that papal audience and her encounter with Pope Leo XIII and what it meant to her emotionally after the encounter with him. So she writes, "After the Mass of Thanksgiving, following that of the Holy Father," which is interesting. So the Holy Father says his Mass, and then there is a Mass of Thanksgiving, probably with all of the pilgrims present for it. "After this, the audience began. Leo XIII was seated on a large armchair. He was dressed simply in a white cassock with a cape of the same color, and on his head was a little skullcap. Around him were cardinals, archbishops, and bishops, but I saw them only in general, being occupied solely with the Holy Father. We passed in front of him in procession." So this is the way the encounter with the Holy Father happened for the pilgrims. So there are several pilgrimages, and so you have several hundred people. They are lined up, and one at a time they arrive before the Holy Father. They kneel down, they kiss his hand and his foot, and then they rise and they go. "We passed in front of him in procession. Each pilgrim knelt in turn, kissed the foot and hand of Leo XIII, received his blessing, and two noble guards touched him as a..." This is kind of interesting here. "And two noble guards touched him as a sign to rise." And then she explains in parentheses, "touched the pilgrim," so that you don't think they touched the Pope. "Touched the pilgrim. For I explained myself so badly, one would think it was the Pope. Before entering the pontifical apartment," where they're having the audience, "I was really determined to speak. But then two things happened that weakened her resolve to speak. But I felt my courage weaken when I saw Father Reveroni standing by the Holy Father's right side." Now, this Father Reveroni had been there when Thérèse had spoken with the bishop up in Normandy, and he had witnessed that scene. He is now standing beside the Holy Father because as the pilgrims who are on the pilgrimage of which Thérèse and her sister and father are a part, as they pass by the Holy Father, he can just comment briefly. In fact, he'll do this when Louis goes by. He'll say that this is a wonderful man who has already given two daughters to the Carmelites and so forth. So that's one thing. And she knows that he doesn't want her to speak here and doesn't want her to speak while the second thing is immediately here. "Almost at the same instant," so they're just approaching the Holy Father, "they told us on the Pope's behalf that it was forbidden to speak as this would prolong the audience too much." So everything in her is geared up for this moment when she's going to speak for the Holy Father. And then they are enjoined not to speak to the Holy Father. And that's eminently reasonable. He's elderly. This is his 50th anniversary of priestly ordination. He's already said Mass. He has several hundred pilgrims who are going to go by. If they speak to him, this is going to go on in a way that his energy just can't sustain. So this is made very clear that the pilgrims are not to say anything to the Holy Father when they pass in front of him. And not only that, but the vicar general of the diocese, who knows that they're forbidden to speak, is standing right beside the Holy Father. So she turns to Céline, who is right behind her in the line. "I turn toward my dear Céline for advice." And this is one of these moments when Celine really shines. And Celine just says one word to her, speak. Speak, she said. A moment later, I was at the Holy Father's feet. I kissed his slipper and he presented his hand, but instead of kissing it, as all the other pilgrims were doing, I joined my own. So she takes his hand in her hands. And lifting tear-filled eyes to his face, I cried out, Most Holy Father, I have a great favor to ask you. The Sovereign Pontiff lowered his head toward me in such a way that my face almost touched his. So that's, you see, sometimes there are paintings of this moment, but they don't really give you the real picture of it. What you'll see is Thérèse almost alone kneeling in front of the Holy Father. But she is just one in a line of hundreds of pilgrims. The guards are there. The unhappy Father Reveroni is there. All of this is happening. In such a way that my face almost touched his, and I saw his eyes, black and deep, fixed on me, and they seemed to penetrate to the depths of my soul. Let's just keep in mind that Thérèse is writing this 8 years later, when she's writing the first part of the story of a soul. So she speaks. Holy Father, in honor of your jubilee, and this is what Pauline and the others have told her to say, Holy Father, in honor of your jubilee, permit me to enter Carmel at the age of 15. Emotion undoubtedly made my voice tremble. He, the Pope, turned to Father Reveroni, who was staring at me with surprise and displeasure. He's not at all happy that she's broken the protocol here. The Holy Father turns to Father Reveroni and said, I don't understand very well. Yeah, I mean, how can he sift all this out in just a few words here? Now, if God had permitted it, it would have been easy for Father Reveroni to obtain what I desired, so he could have supported her request there. But it was the cross and not consolation God willed to give me. So Father Reveroni responds to the Holy Father. Most Holy Father, answered the Vicar General, this is a child, so that tells you that sees her as very young for all of this. This is a child who wants to enter Carmel at the age of 15, but the superiors are considering the matter at the moment. And so the Holy Father turns to Thérèse. Well, my child, the Holy Father replied, looking at me kindly, do what the superiors tell you. But that's not what she's hoping for. She doesn't have to ask the Holy Father for that. And I would imagine that just emotionally, this is happening so quickly that Thérèse is just responding, you know, as best she can here. Although, as I've said earlier, with Thérèse, you always have to have a certain reverence because she's not a child here. Spiritually, she's not a child here at all. Resting my hands on his knees, so now she puts her hands on his knees, I made a final effort, saying in a suppliant voice, O Holy Father, if you say yes, everybody will agree. He looked at me steadily, speaking these words and stressing each syllable, and she writes this with a space between the words. Go, go. You will enter if God wills it. His accent had something about it so penetrating and so convincing, it seems to me I still hear it. I was encouraged by the Holy Father's kindness and wanted to speak again, but now the ending is pretty abrupt. The guards and they all, they've had enough of this interruption. But the two guards touched me politely. Now, that was the signal. The guards would just gently touch the pilgrim who is kneeling before the Holy Father, but that doesn't work with Thérèse. She's not leaving. But the two guards touched me politely to make me rise. As this was not enough, they took me by the arms, and Father Reveroni helped them lift me, for I stayed there with joined hands resting on the knees of Leo XIII. It was with force, and she underlines that, it was with force they dragged me from his feet. At the moment I was thus lifted, the Holy Father placed his hand on my lips, then raised it to bless me. Then my eyes filled with tears, and Father Reveroni was able to contemplate at least as many diamonds as he had seen at Bayeux. When Thérèse and her father go to visit the bishop, that's the diocese, Bayeux in Normandy, and at one point the bishop sees tears beginning in Thérèse's eyes. He says, no diamonds, no diamonds. And so what she's saying here, you're seeing as many diamonds as he wants. The two guards literally carried me to the door, and there a third one gave me a medal of Leo XIII, probably like they were giving to all the pilgrims. So the ending of this is very humiliating for Thérèse, and this is where you get her telling Marie in the letter we just had begun to read that she's feeling miserable after this. But let her comment on this. So Celine passes in front of the Pope and Louis and so forth. And then Thérèse continues, "At the termination of the audience, my dear father was grieved to find me in tears. He did his best to console me." I think of that moment, you know, with the heart of Louis and so deeply understanding his daughter. And of course, all of this means probably the greatest sacrifice he'll have to make in his life of the one that he loves so much. "My dear father was grieved to find me in tears. He did his best to console me, but without success. In the bottom of my heart, I felt a great peace, since I had done everything in my power to answer what God was asking of me. This peace, however, was in the depths only. Bitterness filled my soul, for Jesus was silent. He seemed to be absent. Nothing served to reveal his presence. That day, too, the sun dared not shine, and Italy's beautiful blue skies, covered with dark clouds, never stopped crying with me." So it's a rainy day as well. "Ah, it was all over. My trip no longer held any attraction for me, since its purpose had failed. The final words of the pontiff should have consoled me, for were they not a real prophecy? In spite of all obstacles, what God willed was really accomplished. He did not allow creatures to do what they willed, but what he willed." And in fact, just to conclude this piece about the Vicar General, the Vicar General is unhappy about this when this happens and shows his displeasure, but he's also very struck by this, and he decides that he wants to know more about this. And so he finds time to speak with Louis, and from Louis, he gets the whole story and is very deeply moved at Louis' belief in his daughter's vocation and his support for her entrance into Carmel at age 15. And so Thérèse will tell you this as you read the story of the rest of the pilgrimage. He starts to pay more attention to Thérèse. He just wants to see who she is and what she's like. By the end of the pilgrimage, he is firmly in support of her vocation. And in fact, it's his return and his dealings with the Carmel that opened the door for Thérèse to enter. So this is in November of when she's 14. She will enter in April of the following year, which is 1888.
Father Gallagher, first, I have to say thank you for your telling of this story, because I have heard so many different aspects of it, but never quite like this. One thing I did not realize is that everyone in that line, everyone that was a part of this meeting of the Pope, at one point would kneel down and kiss his feet and then kiss his ring. And in the tellings, I think for many of us, we have this image that they were all passing in this line and that Thérèse throws herself down at his feet or acts in a way that is more precocious as opposed to the type of, how can I say this, of being at his feet and then just looking up, I mean, holding on to his hand in a gesture that is very human, which is very desirous of being able to communicate something from someone's heart. I probably read this passage myself, but I never appreciated how close he got to her. This is the behavior of Thérèse, I don't think was precocious.
Oh, I think you have to say that. I mean, there is nothing remotely, and I'd be surprised that anybody could even remotely think that if they've read her text, certainly if they know a little bit of the backstory. There is nothing remotely immature at all about this. It's a pretty courageous thing that Thérèse does there. And it's also in character for Celine. Celine, Louis had a nickname for each of his daughters, and his nickname for Celine was L'Intrépide, the intrepid one, because she was strong. In a way, she and her uncle Isidore had something in common. You know, they were, Celine was the one who would not back down, the one who was strong, you know, who would forge ahead. So it's very much in her character that, okay, they've just told us we can't speak. I don't care. You need to speak here. Speak. So that very much like Celine, you know, her participation in this. it's a powerful moment. And I think, if anything, it shows just a lot of courage on Therese's part. Therese was pretty indomitable too, you know, in her own way. When she sees what the Lord wants or she's convinced of something, she's relentless. That's the one word that I would use of her. And we'll see that later in her little way. Not one small sacrifice shall escape, because each one may win a soul, and so forth. That quality is in Therese, and I think you see some of it here as well. But emotionally, it was very painful for her. And her immediate response to this is that this was a failure. It ended in a very undignified, unhappy way. She didn't get from the Holy Father the permission that she'd hoped for. But she would see with time that this was actually the turning point that would lead to her being able to enter when she's 15, because it's the point in which Father Reveroni gets interested, is won over by her vocation. In fact, he tells her, at one point they're riding in a coach together, and they're going back up through France on their way up back toward Normandy, and he just whispers to her, "Don't worry, you know, things will work out." And in point of fact, he would help them to do so.
Again, because we know the outcome of the story, Therese in that moment did not know the outcome as much, and that's why her heart seemed to break after the apparent denial of what she was questing for. But I couldn't help but think of the discernment, discerning the will of God, and how in that moment she just knew that she knew that she knew, and she spoke. She trusted. She did it. The outcome wasn't what she expected. Again, I'll say it was heartbreakingly so for her. However, it actually did have an outcome and got her where she needed to go. But she needed to trust and enter into that moment. And I think that's a strong something for us to ponder, possibly. What do you think?
Oh, very much so. And the others, the sisters in Carmel, and even Therese, it doesn't take too long before they tell her, "Look, he said you'll enter if God wills it." You know, and that's what she means. It sounded like a prophecy, but it was too much for her to take in at the moment itself. And the whole experience immediately just left her feeling quite miserable, as she says. But as you say, it was the turning point. God was at work in it. Well, to get back to her letter to Marie, just a little bit more from this letter, after she's told her, "I was very miserable, but since it was God's will," trailing off. "I hope, dear little sister, that you are going to continue to pray for me." This is a very nice thing. "I have very much confidence in your prayers." Now, she's probably remembering what Marie has said in the letter just a few days ago, how all of her heart and energy she was praying for Therese for that encounter. "I have very much confidence in your prayer. It seems to me that God can refuse you nothing. Yesterday we were at Assisi when returning," and I'll just quote this because Father Reveroni comes into it again here. "When returning from one church, I found myself all alone and without any carriage. There was no longer any left but that of Father Reveroni. He made me climb up into it with him." So this is just about 6 days or so after the papal audience. "He made me climb up into it with him. He was very friendly, and he did not want me to pay my way. He did not speak to me at all about my business, and I don't know what he is thinking about the audience." She would learn more as the next days in the pilgrimage went go by. "Thank Aunt for her letter. It touched me in such a way that I would not be able to express it." You know, if it weren't that we would never finish, I'd love to quote that letter too. I mean, they're just beautiful things and of the whole family here. And she knows her aunt has written after they've learned of, call it, the failure of the papal audience. And she writes with great goodness to Therese and says, "Oh, don't be discouraged. You know, God's at work, and look at what he said," and so forth. And so Therese is thanking her Aunt Celine for that. "It touched me in such a way that I would not be able to express it. Kiss all whom I love for me. Adieu, dear little sister. See you soon. Au revoir, Therese."
You've been listening to St. Therese and Marie, A Story of Two Cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher. Be sure to check out the comprehensive summary and reflection questions contained in the show notes for this episode. To download this particular episode, along with hundreds of other spiritual formation programs, visit discerninghearts.com, or you can find them within the free Discerning Hearts app or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. This has been a production of Discerning Hearts. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. We hope that if this has been helpful for you, that you will first pray for our mission, which is to offer authentic and rock-solid spiritual formation freely to souls around the world. And if you feel us worthy, please consider a charitable donation, which is fully tax-deductible, to help support our efforts. But most of all, we hope that you will tell a friend about discerninghearts.com and join us next time for St. Thérèse and Marie, the story of two cousins with Father Timothy Gallagher.